eyes from the compass to the water. Jackson moved to check his wife. Sissy waved him away.
You worry about them.
In another moment, they were roller-coastering over 4- and 5-foot waves. The boat was a 19-foot Cathedral Hall lake boat of a type favored by local fishermen for her good, calm seas speed and shallow draft. Her blunt nose didn't handle the chop very well. They were taking water over the bow, but the forward snap-on cover was in place, and the windshield deflected most of the water over the side. That water which did get into the back emptied down a self-bailing hole next to the engine box. Ryan had never been in a boat like this, but knew what it was. Its 150-horse engine drove an inboard outdrive transmission whose movable propeller eliminated the need for a rudder. The bottom and sides of the boat were filled with foam for positive flotation. You could fill it with water and it wouldn't sink. But more to the point, the fiberglass and the foam would probably stop the bullets from a submachine gun. Jack checked his fellow passengers again. His wife was ministering to Sissy. The princess held his daughter. Except for himself, Robbie, and the prince at the wheel, everyone's head was down. He started to relax slightly. They were away, and their fate was back in their own hands. Jack promised himself that this would never change again.
"They're coming after us," Robbie said as he fed 2 rounds into the bottom of the shotgun. "About 300 yards back. I saw them in the lightning, but they'll lose us in this rain if we're lucky."
"What would you call the visibility?"
"Except for the lightning?"
Robbie shrugged.
"Maybe a hot 100 yards, tops. We're not leaving a wake for them to follow, and they don't know where we're going."
He paused.
"God, I wish we had a radio. We could get the Coast Guard in on this, or maybe somebody else, and set up a nice little trap for them."
Jack sat all the way down, facing aft on the opposite side of the engine box from his friend. He saw that his daughter was asleep in the arms of the princess. "It must be nice to be a kid," he reflected.
"Count your blessings, Commander." "Bet your ass, boy. I guess I picked a good time to take a leak."
Ryan grunted agreement.
"I didn't know you could handle a shotgun."
"Back when I was a kid, the clan had this little hobby. They'd get boozed up every Tuesday night and burn down a nigger church. Just to keep us in line, you know. Well, one night the sheetheads decided to burn my pappy's church. We got word. A liquor store owner called. Not all rednecks are assholes. Anyway, Pappy and me were waiting for them. Didn't kill any, but we must have scared them as white as their sheets. I blew the radiator right out of one car."
Robbie chuckled at the memory.
"They never did come back for it. The cops didn't arrest anybody, but that's the last time anybody tried to burn a church in our town, so I guess they learned their lesson."
He paused again. When he went on, his voice was more sober.
"That's the first time I ever killed a man, Jack. Funny. It doesn't feel like anything. Not anything at all."
"It will tomorrow." Robbie looked over at his friend.
"Yeah."
Ryan looked aft, his hands tight on the Uzi. There was nothing to be seen. The sky and water merged into an amorphous gray mass, and the wind-driven rain stung at his face. The boat surged up and down on the breaking swells, and for a moment Jack wondered why he wasn't seasick. Lightning flashed again, and still he saw nothing, as though they were under a gray dome on a sparkling, uneven floor. They were gone. After the sniper team reported that all the terrorists had disappeared over the cliff, Werner's men searched the house and found nothing but dead men. The second HRT group was now on the scene, plus over 20 police, and another crowd of firemen and paramedics. 3 of the Secret Service agents were still alive, plus a terrorist who'd been left behind. All were being transported to hospitals. That made for 17 security people dead, and a total of 4 terrorists, 2 of them apparently killed by their own side.
"They all crowded into the boat and took off that way," Paulson said. "I could have taken a few out, but there just wasn't any way to figure who was who."
He'd done the right thing. The sniper knew it, and so did Werner. You don't shoot without knowing what your target is.
"So now what the hell do we do?"
This question came from a captain of the state police. It was a rhetorical question insofar as there was no immediate answer.
Do you suppose the good guys got away? Paulson asked. I didn't see anything that looked like a friendly, and the way the bad guys were acting... Something went wrong, he said. Something went wrong for everybody.
Something went wrong, all right, Werner thought. A goddamn battle was fought here. 20-some people dead and nobody in sight.
Let's assume that the friendlies escaped somehow. No, let's just assume that the bad guys got away in a boat. Okay, where would they go? Werner asked. Do you know how many boatyards there are around here? The state police captain asked. Jesus, how many houses with private slips?
Hundreds.
We can't check them all out. Well, we have to do something, Werner snapped back, his anger amplified by his sprained back. A black dog came up to them. He looked as confused as everyone else.
I think they lost us.
Could be, Jackson replied. The last lightning flash had revealed nothing. The bay's right big, and visibility isn't worth a damn. But the way the rain's blowing, they can see better than we can. 20 yards, maybe. Just enough to matter.
How about we go farther east? Jack asked.
Into the main ship channel? It's a Friday night. There'll be a bunch of ships coming out of Baltimore, knocking down 10-12 knots and as blind as we are.
Robbie shook his head.
Uh-uh. We didn't make it this far to get run down by some Greek rust bucket. This is hairy enough.
Lights ahead, the prince reported.
We're home, Jack. Robbie went forward. The lights of the twin Chesapeake Bay bridges winked at them unmistakably in the distance. Jackson took the wheel, and the prince took up his spot in the stern. All were long since soaked through by the rain, and they shivered in the wind. Jackson brought the boat around to the west. The wind was on the bow now, coming straight down the Severn River Valley, as it usually did here. The waves moderated somewhat as he steered past the Annapolis town harbor. The rain was still falling in sheets, and Robbie navigated the boat mostly by memory. The lights along the Naval Academy's Sims Drive were a muted linear glow through the rain, and Robbie steered for them, barely missing a large can buoy as he fought the boat through the wind. In another minute they could see the line of gray YPs, yard patrol boats, still moored to the concrete seawall while their customary slips were being renovated across the river. Robbie stood to see better and brought the boat in between a pair of the wood-hulled training craft. He actually wanted to enter the Academy yacht basin, but it was too full at the moment. Finally, he nosed the boat to the seawall, holding her to the concrete with engine power.
"Y'all stop that!"
A marine came into view. His white cap had a plastic cover over it, and he wore a raincoat.
"Y'all can't tie up here!"
"This is Lieutenant Commander Jackson's son," Robbie replied. "I work here. Stand by. Jack, you get the bow line."
Ryan ducked under the windshield and unsnapped the bow cover. A white nylon line was neatly coiled in the right place, and Ryan stood as Robbie used engine power to bring the boat's port side fully against the seawall. Jack jumped up and tied the line off. The prince did the same at the stern. Robbie killed the engine and went up to face the marine.
"You recognize me, son?"
The marine saluted.
"Beg pardon, Commander, but..."
He flashed his light into the boat.
"Holy Christ!"
About the only good thing that could be said about the boat was that the rain had washed most of the blood down the self-bailing hull. The marine's mouth dropped open as he saw two bodies, three women, one of them apparently shot, and a sleeping child. Next he saw a machine gun draped around Ryan's neck. A dull, wet evening of walking guard came to a screeching end.
"You got a radio, Marine?" Robbie asked.
He held it up and Jackson snatched it away. It was a small Motorola CC unit like those used by police.
"Guardroom, this is Commander Jackson."
"Commander? This is Sergeant Major Breckenridge. I didn't know you had the duty tonight, sir. What can I do for you?"
Jackson took a long breath.
"I'm glad it's you, Gunny. Listen up. Alert the command duty officer. Next, I want some armed Marines on the seawall west of the yacht basin immediately. We got big trouble here, Gunny, so let's shag it."
"Aye, aye, sir,"
the radio squawked. Orders had been given. Questions could wait.
"What's your name, son?"
Robbie asked the Marine next.
"Lance Corporal Green, sir."
"Okay, Green, help me get the women folk out of the boat."
Robbie reached out his hand.
Let's go, ladies.
Green leaped down and helped Sissy out first, then Kathy, then the princess, who was still holding Sally. Robbie got them all behind the wood hull of one of the YPs.
What about them, sir?
Green gestured at the bodies.
They'll keep. Get back up here, Corporal.
Green gave the bodies a last look.
Reckon so, he muttered.
He already had his raincoat open and the flap loose on his holster.
What's going on here?
A woman's voice asked.
Oh, it's you, Commander.
What are you doing here, Chief?
Robbie asked her.
I have the duty section out keeping an eye on the boats, sir. The wind could beat them to splinters on this seawall if we don't...
Chief Bosun's mate, Mary Zanamorowski, looked at everyone on the dock.
Sir? What the hell?
Chief, I suggest you get your people together and put them under cover. No time for explanations. A pickup truck came next. It halted in the parking lot just behind them. The driver jumped out and sprinted toward them with three others trailing behind. It was Breckenridge. The sergeant major gave the women a quick look, then turned to Jackson and asked the knight's favorite question.
What the hell is going on, sir?
Robbie gestured to the boat. Breckenridge gave it a quick look that lingered into 4 or 5 seconds.
Christ!
We were at Jack's place for dinner, Robbie explained, and some folks crashed the party.
They were after him. Jackson gestured to the Prince of Wales, who turned and smiled. Breckenridge's eyes went wide in recognition. His mouth flapped open for a moment, but he recovered and did what Marines always do when they don't know what else. He saluted, just as prescribed in the guidebook.
Robbie went on. They killed a bunch of security troops. We got lucky. They planned to escape by boat. We stole one and came here, but there's another boat out there full of the bastards. They might have followed us.
Armed with what? The sergeant major asked.
Like this, Gunny. Ryan held up his Uzi.
The sergeant major nodded and reached into his coat. His hand came out with a radio.
Guard room, this is Breckenridge. We have a Class 1 alert. Wake up all the people. Call Captain Peters. I want a squad of riflemen on the seawall in 5 minutes. Move out!
Roger, the radio answered. Class 1 alert.
Let's get the women the hell out of here, Ryan urged.
Not yet, sir, Breckenridge replied.
He looked around, his professional eye making a quick evaluation.
I want some more security here first. Your friends might have landed upriver and be coming overland. That's how I'd do it. In 10 minutes, I'll have a platoon of riflemen sweeping the grounds. Maybe a full squad here in 5.
If my people ain't too drunked out, he concluded quietly, reminding Ryan that it was indeed a Friday night, Saturday morning, and Annapolis had many bars.
Cummings and Foster, look after the ladies. Mendoza, get on one of these boats and keep a lookout. Y'all heard the man, so stay awake.
Breckenridge walked up and down the seawall for a minute, checking fields of view and fields of fire. The .45 Colt automatic looked small in his hands. They could see in his face that he didn't like the situation, and wouldn't until he had more people here and the civilians tucked safely away. Next, he checked the women out.
You ladies all right?
Oh, sorry, Mrs. Jackson. We'll get you to the sick bay real quick, ma'am.
Any way to turn the lights off? Ryan asked. Not that I know of. I don't like being under 'em either. Settle down, Lieutenant. We got all this open ground behind us, so nobody's going to sneak up this way. Soon as I get things organized, we'll get the ladies off to the dispensary and put a guard on 'em.
You ain't as safe as I'd like, but we're getting there.
How did you get away?
Like Robbie said, we got lucky. He did 2 of them with the shotgun. I got one in the boat. The other one got popped by his own man.
Ryan shivered, this time not from wind or rain.
It was kind of hairy there for a while.
I believe it. These guys ain't good.
The terrorists?
You tell me.
They had surprise going for them before, and that counts for a lot.
We'll see about that.
Breckenridge nodded.
There's a boat out there!
It was Mendoza, up on one of the YPs.
Okay, boys, the sergeant major breathed, holding his .45 up alongside his head. Just wait another couple of minutes till we get some real weapons here.
They're coming in slow, the Marine called.
Breckinridge's first look was to make sure the women were safely behind cover. Then he ordered everyone to spread out and pick an open spot between the moored boats.
"And for Christ's sake, keep your damned heads down!"
Ryan picked a spot for himself. The others did the same, at intervals from 10 to over 100 feet apart. He felt the reinforced concrete seawall with his hand. He was sure it would stop a bullet. The 4 sailors from the YP duty section stayed with the women, with a marine on either side. Breckinridge was the only one moving, crouching behind the seawall, following the white shape of the moving boat. He got to Ryan.
"There, about 80 yards out, going left to right. They're trying to figure things out, too." "Just give me a couple more minutes, people," he whispered.
"Yeah." Ryan thumbed off the safety, one eye above the lip of the concrete. It was just a white outline, but he could hear the muted sputter of the engine. The boat turned in toward where Robbie had tied up the one they'd stolen. It was their first real mistake, Jack thought.
"Great."
The sergeant major leveled his automatic, shielded by the stern of a boat.
"Okay, gentlemen. Come on if you're coming."
Another pickup truck approached on Sims Drive. It came up without lights and stopped right by the women. 8 men jumped off the back. 2 Marines ran along the seawall and were illuminated by a light between 2 of the moored YPs. Out on the water, the small boat lit up with muzzle flashes, and both Marines went down. Bullets started hitting the moored boats around them. Breckinridge turned and yelled.
"Fire!"
The area exploded with noise. Ryan spotted on the flashes and depressed his trigger with care. The submachine gun fired 4 rounds before locking open on an empty magazine. He cursed and stared stupidly at the weapon before he realized that he had a loaded pistol in his belt. He got the Browning up and fired a single shot before he realized that the target wasn't there anymore. The noise from the boat's motor increased dramatically.
"Cease fire! Cease fire! They're bugging out!" Breckinridge called. "Anybody hit?"
"Over here,"
someone called to the right, where the women were. Ryan followed the sergeant major over. 2 Marines were down, one with a flesh wound in the arm, but the other had taken a round right through the hip and was screaming like a banshee. Kathy was already looking at him.
"Mendoza, what's happening?" Breckinridge called. "They're heading out. Wait. Yeah, they're moving east."
"Move your hands, soldier," Kathy was saying. The private first class had taken a painful hit just below the belt on his left side.
"Okay, okay. You're going to be all right. It hurts, but we can fix it."
Breckinridge reached down to take the man's rifle. He tossed it to Sergeant Cummings.
"Who's in command here?"
demanded Captain Mike Peters.
"I guess I am," Robbie said.
"Christ, Robbie, what's going on?
What the hell does it look like?"
Another truck arrived, carrying another 6 Marines. They took one collective look at the wounded men and yanked at the charging handles on their rifles.
"God damn it, Robbie!"
"Sir,"
Captain Peters yelled.
"Terrorists. They tried to get us at Jack's place. They were trying to get... Well, look!"
"Good evening, Captain,"
the prince said after checking his wife.
"Did we get any?"
"I didn't have a clear shot."
His voice showed real disappointment at that.
"I don't know, sir," Breckinridge answered. "I saw some rounds go short, and pistol stuff won't penetrate a boat like that."
Another series of lightning flashes illuminated the area.
"I see 'em. They're going out to the bay," Mendoza called.
"Damn,"
Breckinridge growled.
"You 4 get the ladies over to the dispensary."
He bent down to help the princess to her feet as Robbie lifted his wife.
"You want to give the little girl to the private, ma'am? They're going to take you to the hospital and get you all dried off."
Ryan saw that his wife was still trying to help one of the wounded Marines, then looked at the patrol boat in front of him.
"Robbie?"
"Yeah, Jack."
"Does this boat have radar?"
Chief Sinamorowski answered.
"They all do, sir."
A Marine lowered the tailgate on the one pickup and helped Jackson load his wife aboard.
"What are you thinking, Jack?"
"How fast are they?"
"About 13.
"I don't think they're fast enough."
Chief Bosun's mates and Amoraski looked over the seawall at the boat Robbie had steered in.
"In the seas we got now, you bet I can catch one of those little things. But I need someone to work the radar. I don't have an operator in my section right now."
"I can do that,"
the prince offered. He was tired of being a target, and no one would keep him out of this.
It would be a pleasure, in fact.
Robbie, you're senior here, Jack said.
Is it legal?
Captain Peters asked, fingering his automatic. Look, Ryan said quickly. We just had an armed attack by foreign nationals on a U.S. government reservation. That's an act of war, and posse comitatus doesn't apply.
At least I don't think it does, he thought.
Can you think of a good reason not to go after them? He couldn't.
Chief Z, you have a boat ready? Jackson asked.
Hell yes, we can take the 76 boat.
Crank her up. Captain Peters, we need some Marines. Sergeant Major Breckenridge, secure the area, and bring along 10 men.
The Sergeant Major had left the officers to their arguments while getting the civilians loaded onto the truck. He grabbed Cummings.
Sergeant, take care of the civilians, get them to sick bay, and put a guard on them. Beef up the guard force, but your primary mission is to take care of these people here. Their safety is your responsibility, and you ain't relieved till I relieve you. Got it?
Aye, Gunny.
Ryan helped his wife to the truck. We're going after them.
I know. Be careful, Jack. Please.
I will. But we're going to get them this time, babe. He kissed his wife. There was a funny sort of look on her face. Something more than concern. Are you okay?
I'll be fine. You worry about you. Be careful.
Sure, babe. I'll be back. But they won't.
Jack turned away to jump aboard the boat. He went inside the deckhouse and found the ladder to the bridge.
I am Chief Zanamorowski, and I have the con, she announced.
Mary Zanamorowski didn't look like a chief bosun's mate, but the young seaman. Was seawoman the proper term for her? Jack wondered. On the wheel, jumped as though she were.
Starboard back 2/3, port back 1/3, left full rudder.
Sterline is in, a seaman. This one was a man, reported.
Very well, she acknowledged, and continued her terse commands to get the YP away from the dock. Within seconds they were clear of the seawall and the other boats.
Right full rudder, all ahead full. Come to new course 135.
She turned.
How's the radar look?
The prince was looking over the controls on the unfamiliar set. He found the clutter suppression switch and bent down to the viewing hood.
Ah, target bearing 118, range 1300, target course northeasterly, speed about 8 knots.
That's about right. It can get choppy by the point, Chief C thought.
What's our mission, Commander?
Can we stay with them?
They shot up my boats. I'll ram the turkeys if you want, sir, the chief replied.
I can give you 13 knots as long as you want. I doubt they can do more than 10 in the seas we got.
Okay. I want us to follow as close as we can without being spotted.
The chief opened one of the pilot house doors and looked at the water.
We'll close to 300. Anything else?
Go ahead and close up. For the rest of it,
I am open to ideas, Robbie replied.
How about we see where they're going, Jack suggested. Then we can call in the cavalry.
That makes sense. If they try to run for shore...
Christ, I'm a fighter pilot, not a cop.
Robbie lifted the radio microphone. The set showed the boat's call sign, NAEF.
Naval Station Annapolis, this is November Alpha Echo Foxtrot. Do you read? Over.
He had to repeat the call twice more before getting an acknowledgement.
Annapolis, give me a phone patch to the superintendent.
He just called us, sir. Stand by.
A few clicks followed, plus the usual static.
This is Admiral Reynolds. Who is this?
Lieutenant Commander Jackson, sir, aboard the 76 boat. We are 1 mile southeast of the academy in pursuit of the boat that just shot up our waterfront.
Is that what happened?
All right, who do you have aboard?
Chief Zanamorowski in the duty boat section, Captain Peters and some Marines, Dr. Ryan and,
Captain Wales, sir, of the Royal Navy, Robbie answered.
Is that where he is? I have the FBI on the other phone.
Christ, Robbie.
Okay, the civilians are under guard at the hospital, and the FBI and police are on the way here. Repeat your situation and then state your intentions.
Sir, we are tracking the boat that attacked the dock.
Our intentions are to close and track by radar to determine its destination, then call in the proper law enforcement agencies, sir.
Robbie smiled into the mic at his choice of words.
My next call is to Coast Guard Baltimore, sir. Looks like they're heading in that direction at the moment.
Roger that.
Very well, you may continue the mission, but the safety of your guests is your responsibility. Do not, repeat, do not take any unnecessary chances. Acknowledge.
Yes, sir. We will not take any unnecessary chances.
Use your head, Commander, and report as necessary. Out.
Now there's a vote of confidence, Jackson thought aloud.
Carry on.
Left 15 degrees rudder, Chief C ordered, rounding Greenbury Point. Come to new course 020.
Target bearing 014, range 1400, speed still 8 knots, His Highness told the quartermaster on the chart table. They took a shorter route around this point.
No problem, the chief noted, looking at the radar plot. We have deep water all the way up from here.
Chief Z, do we have any coffee aboard?
I got a pot in the galley, sir, but I don't have anybody to work it.
I'll take care of that, Jack said. He went below, then to starboard and below again. The galley was a small one, but the coffee machine was predictably of the proper size. Ryan got it started and went back topside. Breckenridge was passing out life jackets to everyone aboard, which seemed a sensible enough precaution. The Marines were deployed on the bridge walk outside the pilot house.
Coffee in 10 minutes, he announced.
Say again, Coast Guard, Robbie said into the microphone.
Navy Echo Foxtrot, this is Coast Guard Baltimore. Do you read? Over.
That's better.
Can you tell us what's going on?
We are tracking a small boat, about a 20-footer, with 10 or more armed terrorists aboard.
He gave position, course, and speed.
Acknowledge that.
Roger, you say a boat full of bad guys and machine guns. Is this for real? Over.
That's affirmative, son. Now let's cut the crap and get down to it.
The response was slightly miffed.
Roger that. We have a 41 boat about to leave the dock and a 32-footer will be about 10 minutes behind it. These are small harbor patrol boats. They are not equipped to fight a surface gun action, mister.
We have 10 Marines aboard, Jackson replied. Do you request assistance?
Hell yes. That's affirmative, Echo Foxtrot. I have the police and the FBI on the phone, and they are heading to this area.
Okay, have your 41 boat call us when they clear the dock. Let's have your boat track from in front and we'll track from behind. If we can figure where the target is heading, I want you to call in the cops.
We can do that easy enough. Let me get some things rolling here, Navy. Stand by.
A ship, the prince said.
It's gotta be, Ryan agreed.
The same way they did it when they rescued that Miller bastard.
Robbie, can you get the Coast Guard to give us a list of the ships in the harbor?
Werner and both hostage rescue groups were already moving. He wondered what had gone wrong, and right tonight, but that would be determined later. For the moment, he had agents and police heading toward the Naval Academy to protect the people he was supposed to have rescued, and his men were split between an FBI Chevy Suburban and 2 state police cars, all heading north on Ritchie Highway toward Baltimore. If only they could use helicopters, he thought, but the weather was too bad, and everyone had had enough of that for one night. They were back to being a SWAT team, a purpose for which they were well suited. Despite everything that had gone wrong tonight, they now had a large group of terrorists flushed and in the open.
Here's the list of the ships in port, the Coast Guard lieutenant said over the radio. We had a lot of them leave Friday night, so the list isn't too long. I'll start off at the Dundalk Marine Terminal. Nissan Courier, Japanese registry. She's a car carrier out of Yokohama delivering a bunch of cars and trucks. Wilhelm Scherner, West German registry, a container boat out of Bremen with general cargo. Costanza, Cypriot registry, out of Valletta, Malta.
Bingo, Ryan said.
Scheduled to sail in about 5 hours, looks like. George McCready, American, arrived with a cargo of lumber from Portland, Oregon. That's the last one there.
Tell me about the Costanza, Robbie said, looking at Jack.
She arrived in ballast and loaded up a cargo mainly of farm equipment and some other stuff.
Sails before dawn, supposed to be headed back for Valletta.
That's probably our boy, Jack said quietly.
Stand by, Coast Guard.
Robbie turned away from the radio.
How do you know, Jack?
I don't know, but it's a solid guess. When these bastards pulled that rescue on Christmas Day, they were probably picked up in the channel by a Cypriot-registered ship. We think their weapons get to them through a Maltese dealer who works with a South African, and a lot of terrorists move back and forth through Malta. The local government's tight with a certain country due south of there. The Maltese don't get their own hands dirty, but they're real good at looking the other way if the money's right. Robbie nodded and keyed his mic.
Coast Guard, have you gotten things straightened out with the local cops?
That's a Raj, Navy.
Tell them that we believe the target's objective is the Costanza.
Roger that. We'll have our 32 boats stake her out and call in the cops.
Don't let them see you, Coast Guard.
Understood, Navy. We can handle that part easy enough. Stand by.
Navy, be advised that our 41 boat reports radar contact with you and the target, rounding Bodkin Point. Is this correct? Over.
Yes, called the quartermaster at the chart table. He was making a precise record of the course tracks from the radar plot.
That's a firm, Coast Guard. Tell your boat to take station 500 yards forward of the target. Acknowledge.
Roger. 500 yards.
Okay, let's see if we can get the cops moving. Stand by.
We got him, Ryan thought aloud.
Lieutenant. Keep your hands still, sir.
It was Breckenridge. He reached into Ryan's belt and extracted the Browning automatic. Jack was surprised to see that he'd stuck it in there with the hammer back and safety off. Breckenridge lowered the hammer and put the pistol back where it was.
Let's try to think safe, sir, okay? Otherwise you might lose something important.
Ryan nodded rather sheepishly.
Thanks, Scunny. Somebody has to protect the lieutenants.
Breckenridge turned.
Okay, Marines. Let's stay awake out there.
You got a man on the Prince? Jack asked.
Even before the Admiral said so.
The Sergeant Major gestured to where a corporal was standing, rifle in hand, 3 feet from His Highness, with orders to stay between him and the gunfire. 5 minutes later, a trio of state police cars drove without lights to berth 6 of the Dundalk Marine Terminal. The cars were parked under one of the gantry cranes used for transferring cargo containers, and 5 officers walked quietly to the ship's accommodation ladder. A crewman stationed there stopped them, or tried to. A language barrier prevented proper communications. He found himself accompanying the troopers with his hands cuffed behind his back. The senior police officer bounded up 3 more ladders and arrived at the bridge.
"What is this?"
"And who might you be?"
the cop inquired from behind a shotgun.
"I am the master of this ship," Captain Nikolai Frenza proclaimed.
"Well, Captain, I am Sergeant William Powers of the Maryland State Police, and I have some questions for you."
"You have no authority on my ship," Frenza answered.
His accent was a mixture of Greek and some other tongue.
"I will talk to the Coast Guard and no one else."
"I want to make this real clear." Powers walked the 15 feet to the captain, his hands tight around the Ithaca 12-gauge shotgun. "That shore you're tied to is the state of Maryland, and this shotgun says I got all the authority I need. Now we have information that a boatload of terrorists is coming here, and the word is they've killed a bunch of people, including 3 state troopers."
He planted the muzzle against Frenza's chest.
"Captain, if they do come here, or if you fuck with me any more tonight, you are in a whole shitpot full of trouble. Do you understand me?"
The man wilted before his eyes, Powers saw.
"So the information is correct.
Good.
You would be well advised to cooperate, 'cause pretty soon we're going to have more cops here than you ever saw. You just might need some friends, mister. If you have something to tell me, I want to hear it right now."
Frenza hesitated, his eyes shifting toward the bow and back. He was in deep trouble, more than his advance payment would ever cover.
"There are 4 of them aboard. They are forward, starboard side, near the bow. We didn't know."
"Shut up."
Powers nodded to a corporal who got on his portable radio.
What about your crew?
The crew is below, preparing to take the ship to sea.
Sarge, the Coast Guard says they're 3 miles off and heading in.
All right. Powers pulled a set of handcuffs from his belt. He and his men took the 4 men standing bridge watch and secured them to the ship's wheel and 2 other fittings. Captain, if you or your people make any noise at all, I'll come back here and splatter you all over this ship. I am not kidding. Powers took his men down to the main deck and forward on the port side. The Costanza's superstructure was all aft. Forward of it, the deck was a mass of cargo containers, each the size of a truck trailer, piled 3 and 4 high. Between each pile was an artificial alleyway, perhaps 3 feet wide, which allowed them to approach the bow unobserved. The sergeant had no SWAT experience, but all of his men had shotguns, and he did know something of infantry tactics. It was like walking alongside a building, except that the street was made of rusty steel. The rain had abated, finally, but it still made noise, clattering on the metal container boxes. They passed the last of these to find that the ship's forward hold was open and a crane was hanging over the starboard side. Powers peeked around the corner and saw 2 men standing at the far side of the deck. They appeared to be looking southeast, toward the entrance to the harbor. There was no easy way to approach. He and his men crouched and went straight toward them. They'd gotten halfway when one turned.
"Who are you?"
"State police." Powers noted the accent and brought his gun up, but he tripped on a deck fitting and his first shot went into the air. The man on the starboard side came up with a pistol and fired, also missing, then ducked behind the container. The 4th state trooper went forward around the deck hatch and fired at the container edge, covering his comrades. Powers heard a flurry of conversation and the sound of running feet. He took a deep breath and ran to the starboard side. No one was in sight. The men who'd run aft were nowhere to be seen. There was an accommodation ladder leading from an opening in the rail down to the water, and nothing else but a radio that someone had dropped. Oh, shit. The tactical situation was lousy. He had armed criminals close by but out of sight, and a boatload of others on the way. He sent one of his men to the port side to watch that line of approach, and another to train his shotgun down the starboard side. Then he got on the radio and learned that plenty more help was on the way. Powers decided to sit tight and take his chances. He'd known Larry Fontana, helped carry his coffin out of the church, and he was damned if he'd pass up the chance to get the people who'd killed him. A state police car had taken the lead. The FBI was now on the Francis Scott Key Bridge, crossing over Baltimore Harbor. The next trick was to get from the expressway to the marine terminal. A trooper said he knew a shortcut, and he led the procession of 3 cars. A 20-foot boat was going under the bridge at that very moment.
Target coming right. Appears to be heading towards a ship tied to the quay, bearing 352, His Highness reported.
That's it, Ryan said. We got him. Chief, let's close up some, Jackson ordered.
They might spot us, sir. The rain's slacking off. If they're heading to the north, I can close up on their port side. They're heading for that ship.
You want us to hit them right when they get there?
Chief Zanamorowski asked.
That's right.
Okay, I'll get somebody on the searchlight.
Captain Peters, you'll want to get your Marines on the starboard side.
Looks like surface action starboard,
Chief Z noted. Navy regulations prohibited her from serving on a combatant ship, but she'd beaten the game after all.
Right. Peters gave the order and Breckenridge got the Marines in place. Ryan left the pilot house and went to the main deck aft. He had already come to his decision. Sean Miller was out there.
I hear a boat,
one of the troopers said quietly.
Yeah.
Powers fed around into his shotgun. He looked aft. There were people there with guns. He heard footsteps behind him.
More police.
Who's in charge here? A corporal asked.
I am, Powers replied. You stay here. You 2, move aft. If you see a head come out from behind a container, blow it the hell off.
I see it.
So did Powers. A white fiberglass boat appeared 100 yards off, coming slowly up to the ship's ladder.
Jesus.
It seemed full of people, and every one, he'd been told, had an automatic weapon. Unconsciously, he felt the steel plating on the ship's side. He wondered if it would stop a bullet. Most troopers now wore protective body armor, but Powers didn't. The sergeant flipped off the safety on his shotgun. It was just about time. The boat approached like a car edging into a parking space. The helmsman nosed the boat to the bottom of the accommodation ladder, and someone in the bow tied it off. Two men got out onto the small lower platform. They helped someone off the boat, then started to carry him up the metal staircase. Powers let them get halfway.
"Freeze! State police!"
He and two others pointed shotguns straight down at the boat. "Move and you're dead," he added, and was sorry for it. It sounded too much like TV. He saw heads turn upward, a few mouths open in surprise. A few hands moved, too, but before anything that looked like a weapon moved in his direction, a 2-foot searchlight blazed down on the boat from seaward. Powers was thankful for the light. He saw their heads snap around, then up at him. He could see their expressions now. They were trapped, and knew it.
"Hi there,"
a voice came from across the water. It was a woman's voice on a loudspeaker. "If anybody moves, I have 10 Marines to blow you to hell and gone. Make my day," the voice concluded. Sergeant Powers winced at that. Then another light came on.
"This is the U.S. Coast Guard. You are all under arrest."
"Like hell," Powers screamed. "I got 'em!"
It took another minute to establish what was going on to everyone's satisfaction. The big gray Navy patrol boat came right alongside the smaller boat, and Powers was relieved to see 10 rifles pointed at his prisoners.
"Okay, let's put all the guns down, people, and come up one at a time."
His head jerked around as a single pistol shot rang out, followed by a pair of shotgun blasts. The sergeant winced, but ignored it as best he could and kept his gun zeroed on the boat.
"I seen one," a trooper said. "About 100 feet back of us."
"Cover it," Powers ordered.
"Okay, you people get the hell up here and flat down on the deck."
The first two arrived, carrying a third man who was wounded in the chest. Powers got them stretched out, face down on the deck, forwards of the front rank of containers. The rest came up singly. By the time the last was up, he'd counted 12. Several more of them hurt. They'd left behind a bunch of guns and what looked like a body.
"Hey, Marines! We could use a hand here."
It was all the encouragement he needed. Ryan was standing on the YP's afterdeck and jumped down. He slipped and fell on the deck. Breckenridge arrived immediately behind him and looked at the body the terrorists had left behind. A half-inch hole had been drilled in the man's forehead.
"I thought I got off one good round. Lead on, Lieutenant."
He gestured at the ladder. Ryan charged up the steps, pistol in hand. Behind him, Captain Peters was screaming something at him, but Jack simply didn't care.
"Careful! We have bad guys down that way in the container stacks," Powers warned.
Jack went around the front rank of metal boxes and saw the men face down on the deck, hands behind their necks, with a pair of troopers standing over them. In a moment there were 6 Marines there, too. Captain Peters came up and went to the police sergeant, who seemed to be in command.
"We have at least 2 more, maybe 4, hiding in the container rows," Powers said. "Want some help flushing them out?"
"Yeah, let's do it."
Powers grinned in the darkness. He assembled all of his men, leaving Breckenridge and 3 Marines to guard the men on the deck. Ryan stayed there, too. He waited for the others to move aft. Then he started looking at faces. Miller was looking, too, still hoping to find a way out. He turned his head to the left and saw Ryan staring at him from 20 feet away. They recognized each other in an instant, and Miller saw something, a look that he had always reserved for his own use.
"I am death," Ryan's face told him. "I have come for you."
It seemed to Ryan that his body was made of ice. His fingers flexed once around the butt of his pistol as he walked slowly to port, his eyes locked on Miller's face. He still looked like an animal to Jack, but he was no longer a predator on the loose. Jack reached him and kicked Miller's leg. He gestured with the pistol for him to stand, but didn't say a word.
"You don't talk to snakes. You kill snakes."
"Lieutenant."
Breckenridge was a little slow to catch on. Jack pushed Miller back against the metal wall of a container, his forearm across the man's neck.
he savored the feel of the man's throat on his wrist.
This is the little bastard who nearly killed my family.
Though he didn't know it, his face showed no emotion at all. Miller looked into his eyes and saw nothing. For the first time in his life, Sean Miller knew fear. He saw his own death, and remembered the long past lessons in Catholic school, remembered what the sisters had taught him, and his fear was that they might have been right. His face broke out in a sweat, and his hands trembled as, despite all his contempt for religion, he feared the eternity in hell that surely awaited him. Ryan saw the look in Miller's eyes, and knew it for what it was.
Goodbye, Sean. I hope you like it there.
Lieutenant!
Jack knew that he had little time. He brought up the pistol and forced it into Miller's mouth as his eyes bored in on Sean's. He tightened his finger on the trigger just as he'd been taught. A gentle squeeze, so you never know when the trigger will break. But nothing happened, and a massive hand came down on the gun.
He ain't worth it, Lieutenant. He just ain't worth it.
Breckenridge withdrew his hand, and Ryan saw that the gun's hammer was down. He'd have to cock it before the weapon could fire.
Think, son.
The spell was broken. Jack swallowed twice and took a breath.
What he saw now was something less monstrous than before. Fear had given Miller the humanity that he'd lacked before. He was no longer an animal after all. He was a human being, an evil example of what could happen when a man lost something that all men needed.
Miller's breath was coming in gasps as Ryan pulled the gun out of his mouth. He gagged, but couldn't bend over with Jack's arm across his throat. Ryan backed away and the man fell to the deck. The sergeant major put his hand on Ryan's right arm, forcing the gun downward.
I know what you're thinking, what he did to your little girl, but it isn't worth what you'd have to go through. I could tell the cops you shot him when he tried to run. My boys would back me up. You'd never go to trial. But it ain't worth what it would do to you, son. You're not cut out to be a murderer,
Breckenridge said gently.
Besides, look what you did to him. I don't know what that is down there, but it's not a man. Not anymore.
Jack nodded, as yet unable to speak. Miller was still on all fours, looking down at the deck, unable to meet Ryan's eyes. Jack could feel his body again. The blood coursing through his veins told him that he was alive and whole.
I've won,
he thought, as his mind regained control of his emotions.
I've won. I've defeated him, and I haven't destroyed myself doing it.
His hands relaxed around the pistol grip.
Thanks, Gunny. If you'd really wanted to kill him, you would have remembered to cock it. Lieutenant, I had you figured out a long time ago.
Breckenridge nodded to reinforce his words.
Back on the deck, you, he told Miller, who slowly complied. Before any of you people think you're lucky, I got a hot flash for you, the sergeant major said next. You have committed murder in a place that has a gas chamber. You can die by the numbers over here, people. Think about it.
The hostage rescue team arrived next. They found the Marines and state troopers on the deck, working their way aft. It took a few minutes to determine that no one was in the container stacks. The remaining four ULA members had used an alleyway to head aft and were probably in the superstructure. Werner took over. He had a solid perimeter. Nobody was going anywhere. Another group of FBI agents went forward to collect the terrorists. Three TV news trucks arrived on the scene, adding their lights to the ones turning night into day on the dock. The police were keeping them back, but already live news broadcasts were being sent worldwide. A colonel of the state police was giving out a press release at the moment. The situation, he told the cameras, was under control, thanks to a little luck and a lot of good police work.
By this time all the terrorists forward were handcuffed and had been searched. The agents read off their constitutional rights while three of their number went into the boat to collect their weapons and other evidence. The prince finally came up the ladder with a heavy guard. He came to where the terrorists were sitting now. He looked at them for a minute or so, but didn't say a word. He didn't have to.
"Okay, we have things contained aft. There seems to be four of them. That's what the crew says," one of the HRT people said. "They're below somewhere, and we'll have to talk them out. It shouldn't be too hard, and we have all the time in the world."
"How do we get these characters off?" Sergeant Powers asked.
"We haven't worked that out yet, but let's get the civilians off. We'd prefer you did it from here. It might be a little dangerous to use the aft ladder. That means the Marines, too. Thanks for the assist, Captain."
"I hope we didn't screw anything up. Joining in, I mean."
The agent shook his head.
"You didn't break any laws that I know of. We got all the evidence we need, too."
"Okay. Then we head back to Annapolis."
"Fine. There'll be a team of agents waiting to interview you there. Please thank the boat crew for us."
"Sar Major, let's get the people moving."
"Okay, Marines, saddle up," Breckenridge called.
2 minutes later, everyone was aboard the patrol boat, heading out of the harbor. The rain had finally ended and the sky was clearing, the cooler Canadian air finally breaking the heat wave that had punished the area. The Marines took the opportunity to climb into the boat's bunks. Chief Zanamorowski and her crew handled the driving. Ryan and the rest congregated in the galley and started drinking the coffee that no one had touched to this point.
"Long day," Jackson said. He checked his watch. "I'm supposed to fly in a few hours."
"Well, I was anyway."
"Looks like we finally won a round," Captain Peters observed.
"It wasn't cheap."
Ryan stared into his cup.
"It's never cheap, sir," Breckenridge said after a few seconds.
The boat rumbled with increased engine power. Jackson lifted a phone and asked why they were speeding up. He smiled at the answer, but said nothing.
Ryan shook his head to clear it and went topside. Along the way, he found a crewman's pack of cigarettes on a table and stole one. He proceeded out onto the fantail. Baltimore Harbor was already low on the horizon, and the boat was turning south toward Annapolis, chugging along at 13 knots, about 15 miles per hour, but on a boat it seemed fast enough. The smoke he blew out made its own trail as he stared aft.
"Was Breckenridge right?" he asked the sky. The answer came in a moment.
"He got one part right.
I'm not cut out to be a murderer. Maybe he was right on the other part, too.
I sure hope so."
"Tired, Jack?" the prince asked, standing beside him.
"I ought to be, but I guess I'm still too pumped up."
"Indeed," His Highness observed quietly.
"I wanted to ask them why.
When I went up to look at them,
I wanted..."
"Yeah." Ryan took a last drag and flipped the butt over the side.
"You could ask, but I doubt the answer would mean much of anything."
"Then how are we supposed to solve the problem?"
"We did solve my problem," Jack thought. "They won't be coming after my family anymore."
"But that's not the answer you want, is it?"
"I guess maybe it comes down to justice. If people believe in their society, they don't break its rules. The trick's making them believe."
"Hell, we can't always accomplish that."
Jack turned. "But you try your best, and you don't quit. Every problem has a solution if you work at it long enough. You have a pretty good system over there. You just have to make it work for everybody, and do it well enough that they believe. It's not easy, but I think you can do it. Sooner or later, civilization always wins over barbarism."
"I just proved that, I think. I hope."
The Prince of Wales looked aft for a moment.
"Jack, you're a good man."
"So are you, pal. That's why we'll win." It was a grisly scene, but not one to arouse pity in any of the men who surveyed it. Jeffrey Watkins' body was quite warm, and his blood was still dripping from the ceiling. After the photographer finished up, a detective took the gun from his hands. The television remained on, and Good Morning Britain continued to run its live report from America. All the terrorists were now in custody. That's what must have done it, Murray thought.
Bloody fool, Owen said.
We didn't have a scrap of usable evidence.
We do now.
A detective held three sheets of paper in his hand.
This is quite a letter, Commander.
He slid the sheets into a plastic envelope. Sergeant Bob Hyland was there, too. He was still learning to walk again, with a leg brace and a cane, and looked down at the body of the man whose information had almost made orphans of his children. Hyland didn't say a word.
Jimmy, you've closed the case, Murray observed.
Not the way I would have liked, Owens replied.
But now I suppose Mr. Watkins is answering to a higher authority.
The boat arrived in Annapolis 40 minutes later. Ryan was surprised when Chiefs and Amorowski passed the line of moored boats and proceeded straight to Hospital Point. She conned the boat expertly alongside the seawall, where a couple of Marines were waiting. Ryan and everyone but the boat's crew jumped off.
All secure, Sergeant Cummings reported to Breckenridge. We got a million cops and feds here, Gunny. Everybody's just fine.
Very well. You're relieved.
Dr. Ryan, will you come along with me?
You want to hustle, sir,
the young sergeant said. He led off at a slow trot. It was well that the pace was an easy one. Ryan's legs were rubbery with fatigue as the sergeant led him up the hill and into the old Academy Hospital.
Hold it!
A federal agent took the pistol from Ryan's belt.
I'll keep this for you if that's okay.
Sorry, Jack said with embarrassment.
It's all right. You can go in.
There was no one in sight. Sergeant Cummings motioned for him to follow. Where is everybody?
Sir, your wife's in the delivery room at the moment.
Cummings turned to grin at him.
Nobody told me,
Ryan said in alarm.
She said not to worry you, sir.
They reached the proper floor. Cummings pointed.
Down there. Don't toss your cookies, Doc.
Jack ran down the corridor. A corpsman stopped him and waved Ryan into a dressing room, where Ryan tore off his clothes and got into surgical greens. It took a few minutes. Ryan was clumsy from fatigue. He walked to the waiting room and saw that all his friends were there. Then the corpsman walked him into the delivery room.
I haven't done this in a long time, the doctor was saying.
It's been a few years for me, too, Kathy reproached him. You're supposed to inspire confidence in your patient. Then she started blowing again, fighting off the impulse to push. Jack grabbed her hand.
Hi, babe. Your timing is pretty good, the doctor observed. 5 minutes earlier would have been better. Are you all right?
She asked. As it had been the last time, her face was bathed in sweat and very tired, and she looked beautiful.
It's all over.
All over, he repeated. I'm fine. How about you?
Her water broke 2 hours ago, and she'd be in a hurry if we weren't all waiting for you to get back from your boat ride.
Otherwise, everything looks good, the doctor answered. He seemed far more nervous than the mother.
Are you ready to push?
Yes. Kathy squeezed his hand. Her eyes closed, and she summoned her strength for the effort. Her breath came out slowly.
There's the head. Everything's fine. One more push, and we're home, the doctor said.
His gloved hands were poised to make the catch. Jack turned as the rest of the newborn appeared. His position allowed him to tell even before the doctor did. The infant had already started screaming, as a healthy baby should. And that, too, Jack thought, is the sound of freedom.
Boy,
John Patrick Ryan, Sr., told his wife just before he kissed her.
I love you.
The nearest corpsman assisted the doctor as he clamped off the cord and swaddled the infant in a white blanket to take him away a few feet. The placenta came next with an easy push.
A little tearing, the doctor reported.
He reached for a painkiller before he started the stitching.
I can tell, Kathy replied with a slight grimace. Is he okay?
Looks okay to me, the corpsman said. 8 pounds even, and all the pieces are in the right places. Airway's fine, and the kid's got a great little heart.
Jack picked up his son.